And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Sean Triggs. He is the regional director for the Lupus Foundation of America, the Pennsylvania-Delaware Valley region, and Lene Jay. She is a lupus ambassador and support group leader. Welcome, both of you.
Hi, glad to be here.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Let's get started first with what is the foundation?
So the Lupus Foundation of America has been in existence for almost 50 years now, and our mission has always stayed the same, where we want to improve the quality of life of those living with and affected by lupus. We're the largest national organization improving the quality of life for all people living with lupus, with multiple strategic outcomes across education, research, advocacy, and just making sure people know that we're really here to help and support their lupus journey.
And I ask that first because I know that the next 29 minutes we're going to be talking about lupus because it affects everybody a little bit differently. It's hard to diagnose. It's all over the board. So when we say lupus, what is it?
Mysterious and unpredictable for exactly what you said. It is different in every person diagnosed. The average length before someone is diagnosed is 6 years, which is just, you know, kind of crazy to wrap your head around. It's something that we really want to reduce as one of our, strategic outcomes. And symptoms really vary from person to person. Anything from chronic fatigue, joint pain, cognitive issues, can attack your vital organs like your kidneys. So that's really why we use those words like unpredictable, because everyone really is so differently. And I think Lene can really speak to a lupus warrior's journey and sort of kind of go through what she experienced when getting diagnosed.
How long did it take you, Lene, to get a diagnosis? And what were the symptoms that you took to a doctor?
Well, when my symptoms first started, it was probably like 10 years. But when my symptoms first started, I was in high school and I was sick a lot as a kid. So growing up, I always had something and it would, you know, disappear or something else would come up, or I would take some sort of medication and it would go away. But when I finally officially got diagnosed in 2006, it was probably like 8 years of going to doctors and trying to figure things out. Like I said, my symptoms probably started when I was like a junior or senior in high school. Then I went to college. I didn't really have too many issues. Like I had a couple things pop up, but then after college is kind of when things started to kind of decline. I went to my primary doctor first. And of course, she just was like, okay, let's do all these different tests. And here, go to this specialist, go to that specialist. I mean, I got misdiagnosed with everything from Lyme's disease to quote unquote bad asthma. I don't even think that's a real diagnosis. For a while, they thought I had endometriosis. So it was just because my organs were kind of just like going haywire. So there was just a lot going on. And I was constantly tired. I just had like no energy. Going from being able to, you know, exercise and do all these things, I was a preschool teacher. So running around like, you know, with the kids and stuff, and then just not really be able to do much, like having no energy. I had fevers for like 2 weeks straight. And so I saw, I think like 4 different specialists before I finally got diagnosed. And I actually got diagnosed by a pulmonary doctor. When he finally saw all my labs and things, he was like, no, I'm pretty sure you have lupus. And then 2 weeks after that, I had this like major flare and was in the hospital. So I actually met my rheumatologist while I was in my like 2 week stay for the hospital. So it was just really, really crazy because, for one, there's just a lot as women and as a woman of color of not being heard. And I think if my primary doctor had, you know, known a little bit more, I mean, she just kind of just referred me. So just getting constantly referred to doctors and them just not listening and them saying, you know, it's in your head, you know, all that kind of stuff is a lot of what us as, you know, folks with lupus face. It is getting better. I do have to say that because I have met several people who got their diagnosis like immediately. And I was like, oh, wow, you're so lucky. Not that, you know, you have a lupus diagnosis, but that you were able to get that faster. So you didn't have to, you know, kind of play this waiting game of taking medications and doing different things that weren't helping. And so for me, my lupus affects my heart and my lungs the most. And then in the past, like 2 years, I've developed more GI symptoms and I have a cladding issue as a result of my lupus as well. But my worst complaint, I must say, is probably the fatigue and just like the constant pain, because nothing, you know, really helps it. So that is probably like the one thing that probably the majority of people with lupus say, like Sean said, no two people are the same. Which is so crazy to think, because, you know, it's a disease. So like it should kind of manifest the same way in everyone, but it doesn't. I mean, in my support group, I have, depending on the day, it's like either 5 to 15 people in my support group. And none of us have the same symptoms, which is just like so crazy to think about. But that's why it makes it so much harder to diagnose, because it mimics so many other diseases and we get that misdiagnosis.
Well, it sounds like for you, it was a case of process of elimination. They ran through everything.
Yes.
Bad asthma. So the process of elimination. And then they finally say, OK, well, what's left? Lupus. Is there no definitive test for lupus?
So yes and no. So doctors rely on many different blood tests. The ANA, which is the anti-nuclear antibody, is one. I had to really pull that one out of my brain, is one of the tests that is kind of definitive of autoimmune disease. Now, there are people with lupus who never test positive for that, but they still have some of the other symptoms. So there's like a little checklist that if you can answer yes to 4 or more of these things, then you should probably see a rheumatologist. So it's kind of the telltale sign of lupus is the butterfly rash, which appears around kind of like your nose and cheeks, and is kind of in the shape of a butterfly. Now, I have never had that rash, but many people do. Constant joint pain and fatigue, fevers, you know, like sores in your mouth or nose, and then chest pain with like fluid buildup around your heart. So there's different things like that, that if you're kind of having some of those symptoms, and also there is some research that there could be a genetic component. So if there's family members who have some sort of autoimmune or lupus specifically, you know, you may be more prone to it. Now in my family, I'm the lucky one. I'm the only one who has it. I'm one of 6 children, and none of my siblings, you know, have any issues. And I was even trying to, you know, like look back further. Now, maybe there's stuff, you know, like my grandparents or great grandparents who, you know, that generation didn't really, you know, either go to the doctor or talk about things. So maybe they had some of that. But yes, there is no definitive test, but doctors do rely on the ANA. And I just was actually reading an article from ACR, the American College of Rheumatology Conference, and there's some more guidelines for diagnosing lupus nephritis, which is like the lupus of the kidneys, and just kind of some more guidelines on testing and things. So there is research being done, which is good, so that hopefully, you know, there will be this one test or marker, you know, like for like things in cancer like that, that will be able to diagnose faster.
Lynette, you said the genetic word, but you, a woman of color, who gets lupus? Is anybody in particular more likely, or is this something that it just doesn't care? It's going to bite you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the genetics definitely do play into a fact. 90% of people living with lupus are women. You know, men, of course, develop lupus still. And then 2 to 3 times higher percentage of getting lupus are minority groups like African American, Hispanic, Latina, Asian American, Native American. And that is why our work, especially around research, as Lene sort of touched on a little bit, is so important, because we know that we can't provide accurate research and accurate results without hearing from those groups that are predominantly affected. We have a program here at the Lupus Foundation of America called RAY, which is Research Accelerated by You, where we encourage people living with lupus to look into clinical trials in their area where they may be able to get involved, provide their insight. We know nobody has better knowledge and expertise on living with lupus than those living with the disease. So we really encourage folks, especially minority groups and women of color, to participate in our RAY program and to really help then our researchers have that accurate data and really be able to move things forward and accelerate new interventions and new advancements in terms of treatment.
So research is obviously an important part of what you are doing. Is this like, well, the American Cancer Society funding that grassroots research, the trials to work towards a larger project?
You're absolutely right. So we have to date funded over 400 studies when it comes to lupus. And that's, you know, across the country, locally here in the Pennsylvania Delaware Valley region, you know, at some of our health systems like UPenn and CHOP. And really it's with some outcomes to reduce that time of diagnosis always, different, if there's different medications that they're seeing, sort of similarities from treating other chronic illnesses that may also translate to helping lupus patients, to also really just researching and monitoring signs and symptoms and seeing commonalities in that sense, to really then have better ways, have more effective ways to diagnose somebody rather than, like Lene was sharing, you know, going to a million different specialists and having this diagnosis, which of course is just exhausting both physically and mentally to go through. So our research really is across the board to control those symptoms, to manage those symptoms, and also to detect, you know, lupus in the long run. And ultimately, you know, the end goal, of course, to find that eventual cure.
How important is early diagnosis? Is that one of the points of education, is to get people as soon as possible? And at what age does it usually manifest? If Lene was saying she was a sickly child, aren't the odds that you've always had lupus?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. You know, from first symptom, it was always lupus. Typically between the ages of 15 to 44 is the most common diagnosis. And I know that's a large age span, but in terms of early intervention, of course, the earlier that can be detected, the then quicker you can figure out what specialists you have to go to. You can figure out which medications may work or not work for you. I don't know if Lene can probably again speak to it a little bit more, but you know, as soon as you get that diagnosis, your care team and yourself are springing into action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the earlier that you get diagnosed, you know, the earlier that you can be treated, like Sean was saying. So for me, I probably was having, like when I finally got, you know, had my first flare and was in the hospital, I had all this fluid buildup around my heart and lungs. So I'm like, I probably had that for quite some time. And I didn't get tests for that. Like they were testing me for pneumonia, you know, and things like that. But all along, my breathing issues and, you know, stuff were coming from this fluid built up around my heart. So, you know, like there's things that, you know, could maybe have been prevented, like maybe my heart pump function wouldn't have been as bad as it was, you know, back then. So, you know, there's things that, like, when you get your diagnosis, you can treat faster, and lupus affects your organs. So if you're able to get treatment for your kidneys or for your heart, you know, whatever organ is involved, if you're able to get that treatment faster, then maybe, you know, you won't have to be on some of these like really crazy medications that are technically for other things, but we're using them to treat lupus because we only have 3-4 approved medications, you know, for specifically for lupus. So we pull from oncology and other areas to treat. So these are, you know, major drugs that are also causing damage to your organs, which are already damaged to begin with. So if we can get the diagnosis from, not from day one, but, you know, like quickly, and then start treatment. But the thing is with lupus, you know, some of the things that I first, you know, manifested my lupus in, now I don't necessarily have them, but then there's other things. So that's another thing with lupus. It changes throughout time. I mean, it could change from month to month, you know, from year to year, or, you know, a couple of years down the line. You know, some people have gone into what they call remission, which is where your disease is not super active, but then, you know, you have a flare and then something new pops up. So that is the one thing, like, even if you do get an early diagnosis, your diagnosis can still change over time when it comes to like your organs, which is really unfortunate. But when you have a good team, which I now have, like they work together pretty well, because I tried to be like all in the same health system so that they can, you know, work together. So it's not, well, this doctor, my cardiologist is treating my heart issues, but then they're not talking to my pulmonary doctor. So there could be, you know, medications or treatment plans that are not coinciding. So it's really important to have a good team of doctors and to, one, advocate for yourself and know what's going on with your own health.
So obviously you were treated for your symptoms rather than the actual disease. So every individual is an individual with lupus, but yet there are things that you can share, like the need for good care, information about clinical research programs, getting the word out. And so let's talk a little bit about the programming that the regional office offers, the direct support to patients.
Yeah, and we have plenty. And there are things that the Lupus Foundation of America offers, as easy as right on our website. If you go to lupus.org, there are things like a self-management tool. It's called Self. And people can access it on their computer. There's a mobile app version where folks can track symptoms, can track medication between doctor's visits. And they can really go on there and really just sort of keep tabs on their own symptoms and be able to take that to their doctors and say, this is how I've been living for the past couple of months. And they can sort of help track those symptoms and next steps. Another resource that I really want to point out is our Lupus Connect, which again is a platform right on our website where lupus patients can connect with other patients to ask questions to anyone living with lupus across the country. You're up in the middle of the night and a question pops in mind and you can put it in there for anyone to connect and answer. And on there, it's really great. It's not only people living with lupus, but it's caregivers going on there and connecting with other caregivers and asking their questions as well and how they can help, provide support to their loved ones. And then locally here in the Pennsylvania Delaware Valley region, we have some really great programs and resources because we want to build a lupus community. And we feel like we have built a really great lupus community. In addition to no two people being the same with living with lupus, we often also talk to folks that are diagnosed who have never met another person living with lupus. And we want to make sure we can offer that support to one another. We have across the region, we have a couple of walks. We have one right in Philadelphia at the Navy Yard, and we have one in South Jersey in Ocean City, New Jersey. Those dates are still to come for 2025, but you can learn about those right on our website too, lupus.org/PDV for our region. And these are intended to, of course, raise some funds to accelerate that research, to keep our programs going, but also to bring people out and meet one another, to see they're not alone in their journey, to learn about how we can help them at the foundation. We also offer what we call our Lupus NU Empowerment Conferences. And we have one also right in Philadelphia that we'll have in 2025, where it's a free educational program for lupus patients and their loved ones to come out and hear from medical experts, hear from one another, just sort of learn the latest and greatest in lupus care, and then leave with some valuable takeaways to really empower themselves to thrive and to live better lives. And I think our most important, program that we have across the region are probably our support groups, which I'll let Lene talk to a little further since she leads a couple of those. But that's really, I think, where we're making such an impact in people's lives.
When you just mentioned the conferences that you host, part of your education isn't just telling communities that you might have, the symptoms, et cetera, what to look for, but it is addressing those doctors and the medical profession that to look earlier for lupus instead of treating the symptoms.
Yeah, that's absolutely part of it. Like we had a really great discussion at our previous Philadelphia Empowerment Conference where it was physicians and patients on a panel discussion, really being able to have an open conversation around what is the physician looking for from the patient? What's the patient looking for from their physician? And I think it was really powerful to have these, to have folks living with lupus in our audience have their voices heard by local physicians that are treating lupus patients every day. So the education definitely goes both ways, where we want to educate the public, but we also want physicians, really to hear what the concerns and needs are of the lupus community as well.
Well, Lene said that, you have to be your own self-advocacy. You have to advocate for yourself. So is this, you educate the people and the people say, hey, test me for lupus when they see their physician?
Yeah, so I've gone to, like, as part of being an ambassador, I go to community events, so like health fairs and different things like that, where I'm out in the community and it's a health fair, so there's all different organizations and things, and I've been able to talk to different people just being there, and just kind of sharing my story, or them coming up and saying, oh, like, what is lupus? And then kind of talking to them about it, and then they're like, wait, I think I might have that. So then I have this like little cheat sheet that I give that kind of like goes through, some different things. And like I was saying, like how you can quote unquote test yourself. And if they're able to answer yes to those questions, I always say, you know, maybe you should go and see a doctor. The only thing they can say is yes, you have lupus, or no, you don't. And, you know, get further testing. And I know for me, when I finally got my diagnosis, I was like, yay, I'm so glad that I had this diagnosis. But I didn't know anything about lupus. I didn't know anyone with lupus. So part of my role as an ambassador and a support group leader is to never like have someone feel that way. So like, I'm always just always talking about lupus. Like, I wear purple pretty much every day, and people are always like, oh, well, is purple your favorite color? Yes, it always has been, but it's also because of lupus awareness. So then I kind of get to talk to people, you know, about lupus that way. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, I've never heard of it. A lot of times, like, unfortunately, people will say, oh, someone who I know died from that. And I'm just like, well, that's, you know, that's another thing why I'm like, it's so important to educate people about this, because of the organ involvement, there's so many things that can happen as a result if you're not treated or you're not treated well. So part of the advocacy part, I always say to people, you know, I didn't start off, you know, advocating for myself. I kind of just was like, whatever the doctor said, I listened to. And as I started to learn more about lupus and just, you know, further educating myself, I was like, wait a minute, I'm not taking that medication. Like Sean was saying, like, some of the medications weren't proven for people like me, African-American. So I'm like, well, I was taking this medication and there wasn't, you know, the clinical trials weren't done in African-Americans. So it's like, should I have been taking that? Not necessarily. So it's really important to understand your disease. And, you know, I always say to people, I'm like, if you can't advocate for yourself, like if you're not comfortable saying to a doctor, I don't really agree with that, take somebody with you, or make sure you write things down, use your my chart or whatever it is to say, share those questions, because it's, I always say, I'm like, you know, the doctor's working for you, like you're paying them. So if they're not listening to you, or you're not feeling like you're getting the treatment that you need, you can fire them and find somebody else. That's what I always say. I fired doctors before because they didn't listen. And now I have a really good team.
Now, obviously, with a support group, you're talking to patients direct, and they interface with you. They get to you through your website, which is lupus.org /PDV for the Pennsylvania Delaware Valley region. If I'm hearing this, if I want to get involved, maybe I have a family member or a friend, or maybe I have lupus, how do we interact with you? And you have walks, so obviously you're going to need volunteers for that. And I'm sure that you're always looking for people who would like to enroll in research projects. How do we get involved with the Lupus Foundation?
Yeah, when it comes to support groups, like Sean was saying, like it's right on the website. And we have two support groups that are just over the phone. So they're telephonic support groups. And I lead one of those. That's actually how I started becoming part of a support group, was through the phone one, because I just was like, I didn't really want to talk to people in person. I just was kind of like, well, I want to see what this is about. Because I had bad experience in the past with support groups where it was just like a wine fest. Like, lupus is already hard enough. Like, I don't want to just hear all this negativity. So there's two different ones. And I think that those are really good for, you know, folks who aren't ready to either sit down or be face to face, you know, with people. And I felt like through that group, so many people have shared things that I think that they wouldn't have shared or have opened up in ways that they wouldn't have if they had to see a person. So we have two phone ones and then four support groups for Pennsylvania that are either virtual fully or in person. You know, like there's like a hybrid type thing. But the nice thing about our support groups is because they are pretty much virtual, you can attend from anywhere. Like, I've got a couple of people who aren't in Pennsylvania who attend the support group that I do, which is called Circle of Hope. And we changed our name to that because I really wanted us to, like, our name to reflect what we do in our group. And so we are a family and we do provide hope for, you know, people with lupus. We have some spouses, like sometimes my husband attends support group with me, and we've got, you know, like other family members that come. So our support groups really are, I mean, they're geared more for the lupus warrior, but we do encourage their family members to come as well. Now, National actually does have a caregiver support group, a national caregiver support group, and they also have one for teens. So National has some others, as well as there's a men's, it's called the Man Cave for men with lupus, which whenever I meet any, you know, guys that have lupus, I always tell them that, you know, there is a support group specifically for you, which I think is like amazing because, and this is national, so it's men from around the country. And I just really think that that's so important because a lot of times, men with lupus kind of get like, you know, pushed to the side because people say, oh, well, that's a woman's disease. It's not. It affects anybody. But so we do have some other national support groups, which I think is just a good way to get started, especially if you just are curious about finding other people who have lupus, because I think it's just so important to connect.
So we know you do walks. You got any other biggies during the year?
We do. We have what we call our Lupus Links golf outing. This is actually going to be its 31st year in existence. It's a really great program. We're at a brand new location coming in July, July 29th, to River Crest's Golf Club in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. So new venue, same mission, you know, really just supporting those affected by lupus, raising some money, raising awareness. Also a really fun day and something we're always not only looking for golfers and foursomes, but sponsors, volunteers, and anyone who just wants to learn more about that too.
Sean, if I'm hearing this and I want to connect with the Lupus Foundation of America, do you need volunteers? Are you looking for people to get involved in your studies? What are you looking for from us?
Everything and anything. We are always looking for passionate individuals who, you know, want to help our work, who want to get behind our mission. Throughout the year, when we have all of our different events in person, we are always looking for volunteers, whether it's to just come out that day and help us out, whether it's getting involved with, you know, forming a walk team with their friends and family, do some fundraising, and then come out that day to support. In terms of our, you know, our research and people getting involved there, like I mentioned earlier, really our RAY program is the way that folks can go on there and sign up to get alerts about clinical trials and where they can participate on that end. And then also on a larger scale for involvement, we're always looking for advocates. So a lot of our work too is we advocate on behalf of people living with lupus with elected officials in both, you know, the House and the Senate. And we want them to support policies around improving the lives of people living with lupus, whether it's providing funding for additional research, whether it's just, you know, bringing these issues sort of to the top of the pile of their, you know, of their requests. We have a couple of ways to get involved as an advocate, as simple as signing up to be an e-advocate, where you would, you know, enter your information of where you live, and then you would receive notifications when there's local legislation to pass, when there's local issues coming to head, where you can, you know, sign to sort of back that as someone who lives in that jurisdiction. And each year we take our staff and hundreds of volunteers, and we go to Washington, D.C., and we have an advocacy day where we meet face-to-face with these officials, and we share lupus warrior stories like Lene's, and we make a direct ask and say, you know, will you support our work? Will you support funding for research? And it's just the most impactful and powerful, you know, sort of days that you can have. And we get a really strong response. So that's another way to get involved and really get behind our advocacy work as well.
Parting words, Lene?
I just say, you know, if you think that you have lupus, you know, definitely contact our organization, because there's just so many resources. And specifically, join a support group if you really are in need of support. And always ask questions and advocate for yourself.
And take us home. What should we take from this conversation today, Sean?
Well, Lene said it really well there. I mean, we want people to know that we are here to help at the Lupus Foundation of America. We want to hear your stories. We want to help them direct you, you know, to our programs and services, or to get involved with that support. We don't want anyone to feel alone in this journey. And we are just here to be there every step of the way.
And for more information, go to lupus.org, lupus.org. And for the Pennsylvania Delaware Valley Regional Office, go to lupus.org/PDV. That's easy, PDV. DV. For more information about everything that we have talked about, whether it is the support groups, maybe it's a research project, a clinical project, or it's to join in as a volunteer. And you'll also find something we didn't even have time for today, the National Resource Center on Lupus. Valuable information for absolutely anyone. And again, that too is at lupus.org. And my guest today, Sean Triggs, he is the Regional Director for Pennsylvania Delaware Valley, and Lene J. Ambassador and Support Group Leader. Again, go to lupus.org/PDV for Lupus Foundation of America, Pennsylvania, Delaware Valley. And thank you both for doing this today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.